Welcome to Life Lab, hosted by David Ponder and Zach Schaefer, where we inspire listeners to live the good life through organic conversations about evergreen topics.
Life Lab captures our belief in personal evolution and a growth mindset. So,
experiment with life.
Hey, good morning, Zach.
Good morning, Dave.
So I think it was just yesterday. Throughout my day, you know, I was working. I had to run and go to the doctor's office and get some labs done. I realized that I had heard the same news story like three times from three different sources. Did you hear about this news story? It was about a Chinese balloon.
I did hear about it.
That was over Montana. The Chinese are spying on us with a balloon.
And actually, I did see some news that it was actually Miller Furniture. It was their half price sale. I don't know if you saw that.
Mark
put his logo on there. Our sponsor for Life Lab, he made a joke out of it and said,
"Oh, are you
this
serious?
Was actually our balloon, and it just blew off course." And he put the logo on it and said, "Half price sale." It's hilarious.
That is awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. I would have to tell Mark that that's awesome. Kudos to our sponsor, Miller Furniture.
Yeah, smart move.
That was a good piece of humor. So anyway, heard it from like three different sources. Heard it, you know, was looking at Twitter. It was all over Twitter. And opened up some, you know, like CNBC at some point in the day to look at finances. Boom, was one of the top stories. And like I'm sitting at the doctor and like the TVs are on. And it's like, oh, Chinese balloon, you know, like people are arguing about whether we should shoot it down or whatever. Everybody had their own opinion of it. And depending on who was what the source was, had its own spin on it about what should happen. And it just, I mean, one of the things that occurred to me was how ubiquitous this stuff is. Like three different – I didn't even care. I didn't ever want to see that or know that. I never asked for that. You know what I mean? And throughout the day, it was like – at first, it was like, okay, interesting story. Like I wonder what that means, you know? And then – but I thought it was like, it's probably just going to be passing news, you know? Like weird stuff happens in between governments all the time. They're testing missiles out in the ocean, yada, yada. But then hearing it so much throughout the day – The number one takeaway I had was, man, like if media wants to get something into your head, they're going to do it. I mean, unless you live in the woods, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
You're going to hear about something. So,
and that's why I like the fact. Go ahead. Finish up your thought. Sorry.
No. That was the first thing when we were talking about this topic that I was like, you know what? There's one thing that's for sure. And that is, there was a time when there was the news and it was, you know, took weeks to get from one country to another some piece of news. And it was in, you know, newspapers were like this big, you know, new technology.
Right.
Right. And you'd hear about something that happened weeks later, you know, in the newspaper. And reading that newspaper probably meant you were educated. You know, I even remember when we were young how it was you were considered educated by reading the newspaper, right? And being up with the news. And just now it's like, no, it's just beaten into your head from everywhere that you go. Like, and you're hearing about things as they happen real time on Twitter and everything. So
yeah,
my whole thought was like, it's ubiquitous and it's everywhere now.
Yeah, but I think it's been this way. First of all, news is what we're talking about.
Everybody's
very clear on that. I mean, there's a lot going on there that I like. First of all, I don't actively follow, quote unquote, the news. And one of our friends was talking about, oh, well, you know, if you want to be considered smart, you're supposed to watch the news. And as soon as this person said that, I'm like, oh, my God, I couldn't disagree more. Because I take to heart Dr. Robert Krizek's advice, my good friend and mentor and former professor. And he said, anything important in life, it's going to be put in front of you many times. So if you miss it the first time or the second time, if it's important enough, somebody's going to keep putting it in front of you. And that's how I feel about the news. It's like, if there's a major world event, positive or negative, I consciously and strategically do not follow the news because I don't want it to suck my time. But I also know I'll be informed because my friends do, and somebody will eventually be like, hey, did you see this? And then if I have interest enough in it, I'll go look into it on my own. But that to me
– let's put a pin in that because the conspiracy theorist in me will talk about all the news stories that get suppressed.
Well, yeah, of course.
That most people don't know.
Yeah, no, that's a huge point. But you mentioned passing. Oh, it's something in passing. Well, let's talk in the news vernacular. It's all about number of cycles. How many cycles does something stay in the news? And then what's a cycle? There's intraday cycles. There's multi-day cycles. There's week-long cycles. And those are all their industry terms to keep things – to keep us doing what we're doing, talking about whatever the news is, whatever the topic. Mm-hmm. But for me, I think the news is interesting because some people will argue it's telling you what to think. I don't think that's accurate. It tells you what to think about. It's a screening feature. It's a filter. And a guy, actually a communication theorist named Marshall McLuhan, back in the 60s, came up with the concept of the global village and how media is changing everything, specifically television and radio at the time. But man, like, I think it's important that we start with what is news. What can be considered news? And I don't even know if we could have this discussion in a public setting with other folks because we're in that polarized of a society at this point.
You're right. I love that. And let's talk about polarization later. Well, to me, what is it? It's a news story, right? Those two words go together, a news story. So to me, news is a story, right?
And it's a story.
Closely related or based on a recent event.
Which should be about truth and accuracy. Things happened, facts occurred that can't be misinterpreted or interpreted in multiple ways. Would you use the word truth or trust in your definition of news or no?
I wouldn't, because I think stories are just tools. And while you'll turn on the TV and the local news station, you know, will say, oh, fair and unbiased news. We're only telling you exactly the truth.
Saying should news, not what is news today, but should it be fact-based, objective? These planes flew into the two twin towers today.
Yeah.
Versus adding in the intentionality and the why and the who.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, ideally it should be pretty dry in fact.
But that – it ain't going to be that way.
It is not.
Because that's not what sells.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not what sells. So one of the things that I – man, we're touching on a bunch of stuff that I want to get back to.
We thought this subject was going to suck.
We're like, news? Really? Do we got to talk about the news? So one of the things that I want to get back to is – what you just said with – so here's the deal. I think a story is a tool for influence, and ideally news would be reported in a fact-based manner, just facts, right? But where the road you were going down, I think, that was really interesting was they'll tell you whatever story it is that they think is going to get the most engagement because they get paid through advertising.
Eyeballs and butts and seats. Yep. That's the media
and the
business
advertisers
model.
Pay them more if they have more watchers, more clickers, more readers. So they're incentivized to tell you whatever it is about those facts that's the most engaging to you.
Which is the most polarizing, which is fear and anger. Those are the best sellers. Everything has to tie back to the emotions. And they know that. They're storytellers. So they use stories to sell the story of the news story. And they do that by appealing typically to the emotions that people can't help themselves but get angry. And it keeps them around. Anger is the best emotion to monetize.
But so I think that's interesting because you were going down something which is like almost like, look, you would too if your incentives were based that way. If you were running a news station, you're running a news station or a news website or anything that's news based, right? A Twitter account, it doesn't matter. Your goal is to get the most followers too, because that's how you get paid. So you're going to tell whatever is the most engaging, you know? And it's funny because I remember when I was back at Crowd Favorite and we were doing website stuff, that's where I learned about A-B testing. So with A-B testing, they will run headlines. They'll run a couple versions of a headline. And then just within the first 1,000, you know, views or clicks, they'll see which one does the person stay on the page longer? Yeah. Which one do they read it more? Which one gets more clicks? And, you know, in 15 minutes or less, they'll then start running only the more successful.
Make changes
one.
Real time.
Yeah. So that they get that more
Do
engagement.
We get more clicks with a video, without a video, with a static picture, without a static picture? Yeah.
So if you think about it that way, I like exploring the idea that these media outlets are but somewhat, like, I don't want to use the word innocent, right? But they're incentivized. I think later we can talk about agenda, right? Where it's like, oh yeah, but they're, you know, these stations are owned by these powerful entities, and therefore their agenda is to spread these types of messages, which I think is – there's absolute truth to that, and we'll get back to that later. But if you just think about it from a – okay, but overall, if we're talking about people on social media, people on Twitter, YouTube channels, TV, all of it in you know, newspapers, NPR, nonprofit-based stuff, if you're talking about it all as a group – they all still share that one motivation, which is get paid. And the way that you get paid is you get engagement.
Well, it's just viewers. If we don't have viewers, can you be the news if you have no viewers?
I mean, you're not going to make any money. I guess you can.
But that's
– You'd be that guy with the sandwich board walking up and down the street.
This is an important point. Up to this point, we've talked about news organizations. Dude, that's – their power's waning from citizen journalists, from Twitter, from individual influencers who set up their own channels, from people like Pomp at a big level, or just people like anyone that's, oh, the Mardi Gras parade, they're videoing it, they put it to Twitter. Like, that's news. That's where people go get their news.
I know it is. That's awesome.
So that's different. They're not looking to monetize things.
And here's the deal. I like that, and some people hate that, right? Like, I think if you were – some people are like, oh, I just missed the simpler days when the newspaper told me what to think and believe about this, you know, where what I actually like about Twitter, and people lately are hammering Twitter for their own political stupid reasons. But the thing that I like most about Twitter is you will see people tweeting and posting little videos and of things happening almost real time. Almost real time.
It's a tool of freedom.
Right. And if something
especially
does catch
in other
on,
countries.
And if something does catch on and hundreds or thousands of people start tweeting about it, you're going to get all the viewpoints. You're going to get all the angles from the different people who are trying to tell you something different about it. And you get to like formulate which ones you're going to try to engage with. And I think that – and it's happening in real time. And then – and this is where I see the stark difference, and it's driven by that technology. 24 hours later, sometimes, you know, at least 8 hours, 12 hours, because it's got to go through their editing process, you'll see a story about it come out on a major news outlet, right? And it's hours after the stuff was happening and people were already tweeting it. And, you know, so like it's interesting to me to then read those edited stories and see what their take is on it, what slant that they're putting
Twitter
on it.
Twitter tends to be unedited and raw. There's just a lot going on. So for news in the ideal world, should form follow function? Because that's what we're talking about here is form, the style, the formatting choices. If I'm a news organization wants to blend the news, the facts, if we can boil it down to one word, news should be about facts, I think. But what news organizations do that have resources is they blend that with PR, advertising, marketing, op-ed. Now it's fucking – you don't even know if you're reading news or the op-ed piece because of the way they label it, how they format it. You've got tons of scrolling things. Like the screen from a visual news is so full of so many messages at once. You don't know is this the news part of the news or is this Fox or MSNBC's opinion part of the news?
Well, even if you're reading a story now.
Yeah, and so for me, the function of what news is lost today because of the form of the news.
Oh, really? Hmm. I don't know if I feel that way, because what I would say is, even in a newspaper article, right? So you could have a news source that has a print form and a web-based form. And your point is well taken about there being too much on a screen, and you don't really – it's hard to discern what message you're supposed to be getting. I get that. My point was, whenever people are tweeting out things, you're going to get all these, like, basically facts, right? And people will be putting their own spin and their own filter on it. Some will, on both sides, if you search.
All will. Yeah. Because we're humans. Well, we're a filter.
Well, and some of them will just post a little clip, like a video clip with no comment.
There you go. Okay. That's, you know, unfiltered. Yeah, I like that.
And so because of that, you get to, like, patch your own pieces of opinion and fact together as you scroll through Twitter, and you get to do it in near real time. And my point was, it then becomes really interesting when hours later, these major media outlets start putting their story on that out, and looking at what they include and what pieces they include and what opinions they include, if any. And to me, even more interesting is what they omit.
Right. They omit the verbs. They use shoulds. That's where the narrative – that to me is a big difference between story and narrative. That's where they're trying to shape the narrative of the events, whereas all the other stuff being uploaded via Twitter from individual influencers and citizens, I view those more as, you know, stories. Or it depends who's uploading it. Pomp, he is a media organization.
Yeah, Anthony Pompliano.
I upload something. I'm just throwing something out there, you know. And so to me, that's really interesting, is just that.
No, I agree.
News today, you really need to ask, well, what's my source? Yeah. I always would say, what's my source? What's their business model? What's going on here? What's their agenda?
Yeah.
But that most people choose not to think that way.
Yeah, yeah. No, my whole point was, it's – first of all, it's cool that technology has changed the way that news was delivered, and now large media organizations have had to adapt the way with which they deliver the news to you. Think about it. If they were just – years ago, they would have had to wait to run a print on the next day's paper. So even if something – like let's say it was years ago just – and somehow Twitter existed, but all the other media was exactly like what it was, right? So you had these huge media outlets, NBC and all the big ones, and they had to wait until the next day to print it in their media, you know. They would have the same editing – cycle that they had back then, right? They would know, like, if a news story broke and it got made its way around the country, that they would have almost 24 hours, whatever it was until that print cycle was, right. That was their editing cycle to write what they wanted to think about it, clear it with their advertisers, which is clearly a thing they do, and then get it through the editing and then print it and distribute it. And now they have to compress that time a lot to try to keep up with the fact that people are immediately getting that information from other sources. And if they don't get it out quicker, then they're going to lose that viewership. People, you know, for me, it's like, I think I'm a great example. If I see something, I don't need to go read it on
right.
some other source. And so I think it's cool how technology has influenced the way that they do business.
I agree.
And had to shorten that cycle.
Well, yeah, it's totally disrupted it. Everything we're talking about, though, still comes from a U.S.-centric version of news. There's a whole other – the vast majority of the world operates quite differently. No matter how much people hate or I don't like our current news market and environment, it is way better than having a giant state-run operation.
Oh, you're right about that.
And we have no clue what that's like. I mean, think about that. The U.S. news, and then people act like that's CNN or whatever. I get it. I don't like CNN, but it ain't like the Communist China News Network or things like that, where you sit down and you know they are just shoveling you shit. Everything's going to be spun for the benefit of the state. Like, we still have somewhat more freedom than that. I do think our intelligence agencies suppress tons of stuff, and there is plenty of evidence showing that.
Whatever, Zach. You're just a conspiracy theorist. Don't.
Well, the Twitter files show that, as to do tons of our interviews with former CIA agents talking about how they do exactly that.
Whatever you think for yourselfer.
But we haven't even talked about mainstream news, fake news. We can't talk about news without these things. I love that Fox and CNN will go back and forth putting in air quotes. Oh, well, those mainstream news people. Yeah. And they are the mainstream. It's just such a joke to
me. Well, it is a joke. So let me say this on the state-run thing. So obviously, you and I are fans of, you know, markets, like let the market decide and capitalism as opposed to central planning. That being said, sometimes I wonder, like, would it just be better for everyone to know that the news was completely, you know, government-spun fake? Because at least you know, right? Like, you're in Russia and you're getting your news. You know. Everyone knows. Like, okay, well, this is what the government says, you know. But
And if you want to get a feel for that, go watch some state-run news, but then you'd have to have it translated. Go watch the movie V for Vendetta.
Okay,
and think about, if this was the world I lived in, is this what I'd want? And my answer for this guy is absolutely not.
Right. So here's my point. Would it be better, at least if the entire population knew, you know, like it was quote unquote accepted knowledge, common knowledge, that the state-run media that you were getting was, you know, completely government propaganda? Would that be better than what we have where we have propaganda, it's corporate propaganda, it's power group propaganda, it's propaganda from, like you said, the three-letter agencies, and it's buried in there, and you don't know what's good and what's not. There's
tons of evidence about it. So anybody listening to this who thinks that we're actually just being conspiracy theorists, I mean, I'm not going to dig through and give you sources, but you just have to go do your own digging, do your own research, and I think you're going to find the same thing. Like, it's a repetitive occurrence where they find tampering and influence from powerful groups in the news stories that you hear that then comes out later, right? And then, of course, it always gets suppressed, right? If it ever is something that is provable where everything that was said about it from major sources was spun a certain way, like, and that comes out later, it's minimized. You know what I mean? Like, the only place you'll hear about that stuff.
Hi, I'm Mark Miller, owner of Miller Furniture, your home for quality American-made furniture since 1927. I'd like to expand on Life Lab's motto, which is experiment with life, and how it relates to us as a furniture company. We're currently in our 95th year in our American furniture retail experiment. Each year, we continue to tweak and optimize what we can do for you, our valued customer. And in any experiment, you must have control groups and variables. Our control groups are, first, you must be incredibly knowledgeable about your product. And this allows you to help customers make really good home furnishing choices that they'll love for many, many years. Secondly, you must provide accurate delivery expectations when the customer is in the research and purchasing phase. And third, you must address any and all customer issues after the sale. So that's the controls. If you can't do that, you're never going to be any good at furniture retail. We've been doing this 95 years, and that is a constant, those three things. Now the fun part, the variables, things that change all the time. And I think, how can I optimize my showroom and my website so that customers love it more each and every year? Well, first, we look at different vendors. So as an independent furniture store, we have over 100 different vendors. I find new ones every single year when I go to some of the exclusive furniture markets around the country. The other important thing is, these vendors, are they equipped to provide what my customers need? So do my customers want more design options, or do they want faster delivery? Because there's often a weighing of that. If a vendor offers 100 different styles, how can you possibly be producing them quick enough? You know, maybe you only want to offer 10 styles and get them to the customer in 6 weeks instead of 6 months, those kinds of decisions. Product styles, those will always vary and evolve. We know that styles are cyclical and things come back over time, and we center around classic designs with strong staying power, because when you buy a solid hickory top or solid cherry wood Amish-made table or bedroom set, most people expect that to last 20 or 30 years, so you don't want to go too trendy, but it is important to have more trendy design options so that you have some, like, right-now appeal. Other variables are in the upholstery, your living room, your fabrics, your leathers. Those things change almost seasonally, but certainly year by year, different colors are become more popular than others. We see that now with warmer neutrals coming back in style, and some of the grays and grayses that were all the rage of the past 5 years are still popular, but they're not quite where they were even 12 months ago. Now, one thing that we have is Amish-made solid wood furniture that allows us to customize the finishes. So you can make the same design look completely different just by using different wood finishes and or paints and combinations of those things. So we have looks that you just won't find in the mass-produced furniture business. Most of the furniture in this country, in the United States, is imported. The wood furniture, 88.7% of the wood furniture sold in 2019 was imported, and nearly 100% of what I show in my showrooms is American made. So we're doing things very, very different than most furniture stores you're going to find. They don't offer custom finishes on any of that mass-produced imported stuff. Plus, they're using things like Asian hardwood, rubber wood, mango, other woods that are soft and not nearly as pretty as maple or cherry or hickory, quarter sawn oak. Anyway, those are all different, the variables. The other thing is there's design-oriented customers and there's practical use customers. So if you're going to buy a kitchen table and you want to have it and it's going to be used all the time, kids are going to do homework on it, you're going to eat breakfast and dinner there, you know, that's something you might consider doing a solid hickory top with more of a medium wood finish because, one, hickory is the hardest wood, so you're not going to dent it as often. Two, a medium to light finish is going to be more forgiving. You're not going to see all those little marks. But if you're more of a design-oriented customer and you want a sleek, dark wood with a nice, clean finish, cherry or maple is going to be the wood species, and you might do a dark finish like onyx or dark night, which has a little bit of a gray undertone. So those are all the things, and that's going to be for a more design-oriented customer. Those are all the variables that are – and there's so many more. There's an endless amount of variables in the furniture retail business. And, you know, in my brick-and-mortar operation in our three St. Louis area stores, there's one additional constraint, and that's physical size. So I am in the middle of a furniture retail experiment, and I have 48,000 square feet of usable showroom space and about the same amount of warehouse space to try to figure out what's the best mix of product for my customers. And that's the experiment that I literally do every single day and that my family's been doing for four generations. And after a while, you know, you get pretty good at that kind of stuff. So we're truly experts in our field. And with the nationwide delivery capabilities that we now have, we can bring you our amazing furniture into your home so you can enjoy it for many, many years to come and hopefully decades as well. And that's going to be on millerfurniture.com. That's M-U-E-L-L-E-R furniture.com and our specific Amish furniture website called Amish Furniture Direct USA. You can also call me directly on my personal cell phone at 618-977-8716. Ask for Mark Miller, and I will be happy to have a conversation about whatever your home furnishings needs are. Thank you so much for your time, and it is an honor to sponsor Zach and Dave here on Life Lab.
It used to be, and talking about new technology and old technology, you know, newspapers would run retraction bits, and they would run, like, updates, and they would bury it on, like, page 17 of Section C in the back bottom corner, right? And so that's how they did it back then. Now, it's that you won't even hear it from any of the, you know, mainstream news articles. You'll hear it on Twitter or on YouTube from small accounts calling this stuff out. And that was, you know, that was just something that you and I talked about last night about something that we would be considered conspiracy theorists for, except for the fact that there is documented evidence that some of these things occurred. And it had to do with sex trafficking and some very famous people who were proven to be, you know, in connection with this known incident that is documented and provable. And you don't hear anything about it.
No one cares about the Epstein list. No one wants to ask about it. No hackers have even dropped the list somehow, miraculously.
Well, even if they have, right? Even if hackers dropped the list and
no one's going to publish it.
You don't hear about it in the mainstream media. It gets suppressed. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. What's going on? The whole idea of mainstream news just cracks me up. Fake news, you know, Trump popularized that, but there's definitely some credence to that. I do think of news anchors as just kind of like failed actors. And that guy, man, that sounds so terrible. Ooh. But that's what they are. They're like reading prompts. I mean, again, we don't watch the news. So like when I'm at somebody's house and then I see like the news or I see TV commercials advertising the news, it cracks me up. It's like the news anchors are walking down the street, showing them with their families. You can trust me. I'm a community member too. I'm here to deliver the news.
Yeah.
And it cracks me up.
Well, there was that – whoever put the – spliced together the newscasters from around the country saying the same words.
The exact message. Yeah, that's a great video meme.
Was really good because, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words and a video like that's worth 1,000 pictures. And it was just those people saying the exact same words like robots, saying the exact same message. And it's not just like – about some, oh, you can trust me, or like promoting the news. It's about some big, you know, like controversial topic.
Yeah.
It was like about COVID or something and the way that you should respond to the pandemic.
Oh, I mean, that's a huge thing with what, you know, what occurred with Twitter and how they kicked people off if they were saying things that they didn't want, that the government didn't want said, and Twitter would just suppress them, man. And that all has come out with the Twitter files.
I think that'll be a good history study. Like, you know, now we're moving past the pandemic a little bit, and people are somehow getting their normal wits about them. Because for a while there, people
it was
were
wild,
fucking
man.
Insane.
It was nuts.
You couldn't bring up that topic without people...
Instant polarization.
Fighting about it. I'm like, wait a minute. What are we fighting about?
Health anxiety is a real motherfucker.
Right. Well, no, here's the thing. Like, when you're talking about the facts, right? That's a perfect case study in facts versus opinions versus propaganda versus manipulation and power structure control. We had a virus. That's a fact.
But
everything
beyond that is somebody's how they want to spin it and what's important.
Oh, my God. People spinning the statistics.
Don't ask a man to understand something when his paycheck depends on him not understanding it. And what I learned is, including scientists. That's one of my main lessons I took away from COVID.
Oh, that's so true. It is so true. And, like, I won't take any side on all of the controversial things that were related to it. But you can pick apart that big pandemic topic and COVID itself, and you can go back and find people saying crazy things about it. Like, I remember at first it was like, people are just dying in the streets in China. They're literally falling over dead. And somebody posted a video of this old person. Did this actually happen? I don't know.
Right.
This old person was just waiting for a bus, and they just like fell face down on the sidewalk. And they're like, yep, that's COVID. That's how it kills you. so like,
but they can,
that was
they
like
can
one of the first
– blunt in
oh
China.
Oh, my God. That was one of the first things I saw, and that was like one of my first introductions to this thing. And then obviously when the news is like, uh-oh, it's in the U.S. now, like I'm like thinking, oh, my God, people are going to be dying just falling face down at the bus stop, right? And so it's that. And then it was like people fighting about the mortality rate. And people are making up different statistics, bringing different statistics. And then people fighting, oh, no, they're counting people who are at the hospital for any reason. They're not just counting people who are at the hospital.
Yeah,
for
it's
COVID.
All it's all just driven from their individual anxieties, their individual agenda, who pays their paycheck. That's what COVID was about.
When I think it's a good case study.
Oh, yeah.
Is someone will do this. There will be documentaries that go back and pick apart the things that major news outlets said that were clearly bullshit, which
and things that were left out
and
that should have been said.
And things that were left out that could have been that should have been said. And the weirdest thing about that one was you had this weird conglomeration of the government, because the government was trying to take control and make people do certain things in the interest of safety, right? Which is a V for Vendetta. Go watch V for Vendetta. It's always about safety.
Safety and national security.
And then you had the pharmaceutical companies who had a clear vested interest in
Which is interesting in the recent news cycle.
There's stuff coming out
the
now.
The oil companies are getting hammered for their exorbitant profits. But, man, with Pfizer making $100 billion in profits, not revenue, profits, there wasn't a single peep from the White House about that one. That's interesting.
Yeah, and there's this thing now on Twitter called Project Veritas.
Have you heard about it? I watched that whole video.
Well, I don't know if it's true or not. Again, we're talking news here, right? So, like, just listen to Zach and I talking back and forth about how you have to be skeptical, right? So there's this thing called Project Veritas where supposedly they have video of a high up at Pfizer.
They do. I watched the whole thing.
Right, but, like, who's that guy? I don't know who that guy is. Like, what's his role at Pfizer?
They had the whole title and everything. You can go look it all up.
I know, but you get my point. We have to be skeptical, right?
Yeah.
But apparently this dude was talking about how they're considering
mutating the COVID virus to then create vaccines proactively.
Right. Which obviously, and then he's like, well, and obviously that's dangerous because if one gets out and it's, we gave it, what's the name of it? Gain of function
research is legal. Right. The point is
news,
or actually we haven't used the J word yet, journalism. Okay. So that's a difference, I think, between news institutions, at least in theory, and citizen journalists. News institutions, in theory, should be hiring people that have training in what the objectivity and processes of how to be a journalist, whereas individual citizens typically do not have that.
Yeah.
But what we've seen, or what my opinion is, I should say, is that they seem to have lost a lot of those objective journalistic approaches, like how to do things in depth, present the facts, let people make their own decisions. That seems to be gone, in my opinion, at this point.
Well, my opinion is that those who hold those values and are true to them end up not working at major news.
Right. Yes. Good point. Independent outlets.
They get fired, and then I've heard ex-employees of major media outlets talking about the reason that they either left or the reason that they got fired. And it always comes back to there was this story that they found that they wanted to tell certain facts.
And the editors didn't want them to.
Yeah, well, yep. The editors, and it came down because it was the advertisers.
Right. Or whoever.
They were going to pull
or the intelligence agencies.
Or somebody, yeah. Some powerful group was going to punish them if they told that story in that way.
Yeah. News should be about keeping people informed and keeping people in power in check. And what I prefer is with technology, I can keep myself informed. I don't need you to do it for me, news media. I can assemble my sources and feel secure and happy and have peace of mind without you infecting my brain bandwidth with your bullshit. But the second piece has really been lost, I think, from mainstream media for sure. Keeping people in power in check, at least with the Biden White House, that doesn't, like, under Trump, absolutely, they gave him the business. That's all they did other than Fox.
That's right, yeah.
And now it's flipped. You know, of course, Fox gives Biden the news, but the rest of them don't. And there's no clearer indication of the silliness and the performance. So people that are political operatives call politics the show. It's the show.
It is.
And I actually lump news in with that now. It's just the show, man.
Me too.
It's the big performance. It's the big stage.
Me too. But here's the here's what bothers me about it. Growing up, my dad exposed me and took me to a World Wrestling Federation event, right? And I got to see the Ultimate Warrior wrestle Andre the Giant, right? And it was like a 5-year-old kid, it was awesome. You want to talk about a show? It was a spectacle. And the crowd was so into it, you know? And only as I grew and you know, became a little bit wiser about the world did I realize that's all fake. It's just a show. It's scripted, you know? But then I started saying, well, what about those people that were screaming next to me that were so into it? Did they know that it was fake?
Right.
They had to, right? Like, it's so over the top. They have to realize that this is fake, don't they?
Maybe.
And now, it's that exact same thing. The only thing is, it's with the news. And it is so over the top, and it's so egregious when you see certain outlets won't say anything negative about certain people in power, and others will all day. And it's just so – it's so obvious that they've got an agenda. And then I look around at the people, you know, in public. I'm like, they know it, right? Everyone knows this, right? But I don't know. I don't think they do.
Right. Well, and it's just interesting how it all gets weaponized. So if you want to figure out how intelligence agencies who operate in the shadows by the function of their organizational mission, if you want to see how they influence the media and what stories get told and what stories don't get told, go watch the 9-minute video on YouTube, CIA officer Frank Snepp, S-N-E-P-P, discusses planting stories in Vietnam. He lays it out. He was a CIA operative doing exactly that, the playbook for how the CIA not only influences the news, but influences the news in a way that gets the U.S. Congress to release funding appropriations for defense stuff. I mean, these are big things going on. That's manipulating Congress, manipulating public opinion so that Congress takes action and funds things. This was in 1983, folks. This is pre-internet. This is pre-Twitter. Their ability to influence and cause disinformation and overwhelm you with too many facts to keep you distracted and digging. That's what lawyers do. I mean, okay, disclosure. Here's 10 million pieces of documentation. The facts you wanted are in there. You've got to find them. Like, that's how that works.
Yeah.
It's unreal to me.
I think,
like,
and
what
the
goes
internet
on now.
Has supercharged.
Oh, my goodness. You know? So the ability for intelligence agencies to get any narrative they want out there, I absolutely believe that. And I absolutely believe that the large media institutions, even in the U.S., are 100% hamstrung from that.
Oh, 100%. And think about those tactics that you just talked about, right? So disinformation and just too much information, like bury it in information, yep. And you got to figure out what's relevant. That tactic is used everywhere. It's used in the news. It's used in politics. Think about a bill. They roll out a new bill. Oh, this is a 12,000-page bill.
It's used in buying. It's buying transactions, commerce transactions, buying a car. Bury you in bullshit. Oh, buying a business. Here's your due diligence. That's a strategy. That's all framed as no. It's disclosures.
Oh,
it's transparency.
We are open
it's
and honest.
It's transparency.
It's in there.
You have the information.
Yeah. It might be obfuscated with 10,000 pages of worthless.
So stuff, one of my change challenges is go watch the 9-minute video on YouTube. It's from the 80s. You know, the quality isn't great. It's an old school, kind of boring and dry interview, but it's a very fact based old school news interview, and he lays out. Oh, yeah, here's how you manipulate the media and the news. Here's how we do it every day. It's my job.
And I'll even say
– and he got sued by the CIA, and they created a new law, a federal law, against people being able to speak out and do what he did, and they've taken every cent of his since then.
I'll just say this. You know, some people will listen to this and be like, oh, they're talking about the CIA, you know, influencing the news. This is a conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. You say anything about – any of the three-letter agencies, and you give it that light, you're going to get the skeptics coming out. So what I'll say is this. Listen to what he says with a neutral point of view. Maybe he's completely lying about the CIA ever doing that.
Absolutely.
But think about if you take nothing from what he says, take only the tactics that he outlines. And imagine if those tactics were applied by any power group
To a topic that's important to you.
To a topic that's important to you today. And think about, oh man, would I be susceptible to these tactics?
Yeah.
I think it'll be illuminating.
Well, and especially not only with the technologies changed, so the ability to plant or suppress information real time for anyone that has a lot of power and money is much easier, but also going back to the form of news. So news isn't, if you decide to watch the Snepp article, it's not like that because that's not what sells today. It's whiteboards. It's teaching you something, which I find just totally I can't stand it. Anyone that uses that format, whatever they're saying, I instantly just – they're done in my book because that takes and perverts an idea of teaching, which is very noble in and of itself, and they're trying to sell. It's just dirty to me. Or the data feeds. Watch the next – if you watch the news – count how many different messages are on the screen at one point, if you can.
Yeah, they've got scrolls.
It's like 50.
Yeah, they'll have like three bars at the bottom scrolling something, and something in the top right will be flipping
through something. It's insane.
Yeah.
Nice. So the formatting, those style choices of the news, that's why I choose not to do the news visually, because I know their game, and I fall prey to it, quite honestly. It gets my emotions going, and it pisses me off. So that's why I read the news, because I can control myself. It's a little bit of self-mastery. I can set it down, walk away. It's easier than click, 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 click. I love to read the news because of that. Like, I've trained myself to never be a click guy with news, so that's pretty good.
That's okay, so I've got a change challenge. And that is, next time that some big story comes out, right, like the Chinese balloon one, there's something that I do, and it's just something I've come to do naturally. It used to be an exercise where if I was interested in it, and this was before Twitter was really as big as it is, I remember I would I had done that inventory of which media outlets will give me a far left message, which media outlets will give me a far right message, and which ones will fall somewhere in between. And then I would have to go read and or listen to what they had to say about it, all of them, and try to then patch together what I believed about it. I don't do that anymore. That's just too much.
Too much time.
It's too much time. And so this is where my change challenge comes in. Instead, what I do is I just ask myself, okay, of everything I'm hearing about this news story, what are the pieces of information that I can pull out of it and be reasonably confident that they are true, that they are
fact?
Yeah,
that's good. And so, where are the facts?
Yeah. So like with the Chinese balloon one, I didn't do too much due diligence on it. And I have other stuff going on, and to be honest with you, and until it becomes
just don't care.
A bigger deal, I don't care.
Of course.
But if someone was like, what are the things that you could say are probably fact about that news story? I would say these. Number one, there was definitely something flying. Well, there was most likely, there was highly corroborated.
See, no.
Well, in here, because it's highly corroborated.
Because a lot of different individual people saw.
Many different people saw and reported.
And videoed it.
And videoed and took pictures of something flying over the northwestern part of the U.S., specifically Montana. Okay, so that's the most thing, the thing that I'm most confident in. After that, it's interesting that every news story, all of them seem to agree that somebody attributed that thing to be from China, right? Actually, here's another one. It was flying high enough that it was on the edge of space, right? It was above where commercial air traffic flies. And everyone seemed to agree that was from the radar and everything that could be corroborated, that was true. Then somebody attributed that it was from China and that it was owned by China, right? Okay. And then somebody attributed that it was some sort of a military intelligence object that was spying on the U.S.
Even though, yes, yeah.
And then someone attributed that it was above Montana because that's where we keep our intercontinental ballistic missiles. Our ICBMs are in that part of the country. So I would say in the order of everything that I just told you is my confidence about that. Like, pretty sure there was something flying over Montana.
But all the intentionality and the whys.
Right. Everything else I get less confident about on down the line.
There's a really good well, there are multiple, and you'd have to do your diligence to determine how they created this. But if you Google media bias charts, there's really good infographics out there that go from far left to more centric to then far right, and they group tons of major media outlets according to their political bias and agendas in both their news and in their opinion pieces, and they separate them out. The one I'm looking at is All Sides Media Bias Chart. Again, you'd have to do your diligence to figure out the criteria they use to actually do the labeling of these organizations. But there's a lot of these different ones out there. I think it's a good starting point to just think about, well, how would a news fact, something flying in the air, be reported by each of these different agencies in these columns? You're going to get different facts, different spins on facts.
So just go to allsides.com, and there's They have media bias ratings, a media bias chart, a fact check bias chart, and a methodology.
And here's one other thing we haven't talked about, but I got to say it. If you aren't paying for your media source, you are the product. Your information is the product. Your cookies, your time, your eyeballs, your attentiveness, your brain bandwidth, or if you're online, all the info that you're clicking accept when you agree to things, you're the product. You're being sold, your information, your time, your energy. So if you want better news sources, pay for it and do the research and know what you're paying for. I think that's really important to say.
That's the last cool idea that I think I can interject into this is something related to technology that I think is going to shape the world in interesting ways, right? So AI, we haven't talked about AI, and AI is going to play a role in this because everything that we talked about with the strategies to obfuscate information with other information, AI is going to be very good at chewing through data. It reminds me of, if you ever go watch the movie Short Circuit, you got Johnny Five and he just wants input.
Johnny Five.
So he starts to, he finds a book at you know, his human girlfriend's house, whatever her name is. Stephanie. Mm-hmm. So she gives him a book and he like blah, 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 reads the whole book and then he wants more input. I want more input. So he reads everything that she's got in the house, like makes a huge mess just reading everything in, you know, a matter of seconds and then throwing it on the ground. That to me is that scene is a really good way to visualize AI. And just, you're going to be able to take that 12,000 page bill full of mostly BS that's meant to obfuscate the truth, and AI will chew through that so quick and figure out. So I think that's going to be an interesting thing that drives the way that things happen. Oh, but the other impacts of that, I think, which this might be a stretch and I might listen to this in 10 years and be like, wow, I was wrong. But it's a fun game to play would be, okay, so AI will be able to do things like that. And that will be a tool. And we'll be able to use that tool in many different ways. Ultimately, that tool will make people like lawyers, whose job it is to sift through 10,000 pages of information, it will make them redundant and or useless, and so they will have to do some other things with their time. And ultimately, we're going to have to figure out ways to compensate people for their time so that we can distribute income. And one of the ways that I think is interesting is going to be exactly what Zach talked about. When you are the product, your attention is the product. And I believe that in the future, you probably will be compensated in some way for your attention. Because we're on the verge of it, right? You've got all these companies that are making money off of your attention. You definitely are the product. Your data, your attention is definitely making them money. It's just not filtering down to you.
Right.
You're not getting any of that.
Right. And that's the whole Web3, you'll own your digital footprint. And exactly. That makes sense.
And so I think that loop will be closed. And I think you will be compensated.
I agree. But I think things will still be obfuscated because AI, the algorithms that drive artificial intelligence, are still human generated. And here's a perfect example. I'm on ChatGPT right now. Write a complimentary poem about Donald Trump. I'm sorry, as an AI language model, I strive to remain neutral and impartial. It wouldn't be appropriate for me to write a poem that appears to endorse or glorify a specific individual, particularly a controversial public figure like Donald Trump. That was its response. Write a complimentary poem about Joe Biden. With a heart full of empathy and a smile that shines bright, Joe Biden leads with compassion and wisdom and sight, a champion for people, and it goes on and on.
That's
interesting. Dude, there's tons of stuff. Like, start looking up ChatGPT and the biases. It's already there, and this is the first version. Like, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, so like this media here's what I suspect will happen. Like this media, this all-sides media bias chart, which says, you know, you've got OAN to the far right, and you've got Vox and Slate and MSNBC on the far left.
They'll have AI that matches it.
Yeah, they'll each have their own. And people will choose the AI that they listen
and
to
cool
and use and whatever.
They just, but people aren't aware. The average person isn't aware of how it operates.
Dude, that's just what I was talking about with the WWF thing, man, the WWE.
Well,
it's like that today. People aren't aware.
I think this one's been more entertaining than we thought it was going to be. Yeah. Any other last thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that this episode didn't just come off with us, like, as us bitching about the way things are.
Well,
obviously, it's not ideal. You know what I mean? Like, we all would love to just go back to the roots and be like, no, we're storytellers at heart. And we get our news from sitting around a fire and hearing our villagers, our fellow villagers, tell us what happened. That's like news at its infancy, at its like purest form, at its start, right? And there was even then, you had biases, you had people making up stories to get their way and preserve their power structure. So I guess what I'm saying is, it's advanced. Technology's made it a whole lot more complicated, and people have over time have come up with new social scientific ways to determine what's effective and what is not in this whole game. But it's always been a game. It's always been the same since the beginning. So I just want to make sure that we don't come off as like crotchety old guys complaining about the way news has been when it used to be pure and good. I don't think it ever has been. I think it's always been.
That's not my point. Yeah.
I think it's like, here's how I'll end it. To me, the news is like the instant version of the victors always tell the story when it comes to war, right? So I think everyone can accept that. Like, how come the good guy has won every war? Well, because the victors always get to write the history books. And so they always tell it as if the good guy won, right? And then that becomes accepted. Who is it that wrote People's History of America? Howard Zinn wrote a book that's supposed to be written from the viewpoint of the losers, right? Which in itself is just an interesting idea.
Oh, yeah, really interesting.
To me, news is basically that in real time. And it always has been.
That's cool. I like that. Cool. Well, we talked a lot. Dave kind of ended on what I would call the geography of news, the localization versus national news. Like, he was talking about knowing what's going on in your immediate area probably impacts your life a little more than what's going on at a state or national level. But news is about facts, but it's also about opinions. And in today's world, those two things are just much more easily blurred together with the types of tools that are out there. There's traditional media organizations, and there's citizen journalists and citizen news anchors, if you will, uploading things real time. And some of it's unvarnished and unpolished and raw, and other times they have their own agenda because they have subscribers, so they're putting their own messages out there. My thought would be just know if you're the product that the news organization is selling or not, and get facts from different spots if possible. And if something's going to be really important, you're going to hear about it from all kinds of different sources. But do your due diligence. Change challenges. Watch the SNEP video. Try to think about it from a neutral perspective and pull out facts. Check out allsides.com and think about media bias. And the last one is what Dave was hitting on. I'd call it get up, get out, go talk to experts. One of the best ways, make it concrete. When the riots, if you will, or protests were going on in St. Louis a few years ago after the gentleman was killed by police officers, there was a lot of protests going on. I knew instantly that news would bias how it went. They'll capture certain things and not. So I went down. I went down to the protests so I could get my own perspective. Get up, go out, talk to experts. Be the news. Don't just follow the news. Become part of the news. Experience the events with your own senses and form your own opinions based on that experience. I think that's the best way to learn about news.
I love it. I love that idea.
Cool. Well, as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.